your voice up. You never know, you might have to cook for 20 guys someday. You see, you start out with a little bit of oil. You fry some garlic. Then you throw in some tomatoes, tomato paste, you fry it, you make sure it doesn't stick. You got to do a boil, you shove in all your sausage and your meatballs. Huh? And a little bit of wine. A little bit of sugar. Delicious. And that's my trick.
When the moon hits your eye like a big pizza pie, that's amore.
Enough. I'm so sick and tired of hearing you people talk about food, food, food. That's all anybody ever talks about is prosciutto, cheese, and fava beans. I'm drowning here.
Jesus Christ, take it easy.
We're not even engaged yet.
When you're married, you'll understand the importance of fresh produce.
I eat with gusto, damn your bet. My country, tis of thee. I eat for social progress. I eat for victory.
Delicious.
Stay hungry, stay hungry, stay hungry.
You want some more?
Good evening and welcome to Mouthful, the Wine Country's Most Delicious Hour. It's Michelle Jordan. How are you doing this evening? First of all, before I introduce our guest, and I'm very excited about our guest this evening, I want to say thank you to everyone who came to the Farmer's Market today, the Sebastopol Farmer's Market, where we talked about the Gravenstein apple. We were celebrating that today, and you'll be hearing that show next Sunday. We'll do a little editing, and as it turns out, the Fondettes, who performed after the interviews that we did for Mouthful, they have a CD, and so we'll be able to bring you a couple of songs about apples by the oh-so-adorable Fondettes. They were just—it's just great to see them at the farmer's market. And the farmer's market, I don't know, it just seems like it gets better every day or every Sunday. We had fabulous tomatoes today. People were in a really good mood as well. I talked to this really sweet man. His name was Joseph. He's from the Pyrenees. Found out he listens to Mouthful, and his neighbors listen to Mouthful, and he's going to talk him into becoming a member. And he's from France and was talking about how French public radio is run, and it was really interesting. So, Joseph, if you're listening, thanks for talking to me today. That was really a nice addition to my day at the market. So we're going to San Francisco tonight. Or San Francisco, I should say, is coming to us. We have Perry Butler here in the studio. Perry's on Union Street. Gosh, I have been in that place so many times for brunch, for drinks late at night, for a delicious hamburger. And Perry, it is just great to welcome you to the show.
Well, thank you, Michelle. It's very much my pleasure to be here.
Now, you're coming up on a big celebration.
Yes, 2.5 weeks from now, we'll turn 40. August 20th, 1969 was the date we threw the doors open, and we're very excited that this many years later, the place is still going strong.
That was almost the anniversary of Altamont, the Rolling Stones at Altamont, isn't it?
Oh, it was the anniversary. The amazing number of things happened in 1969. Woodstock, Man on the Moon, of course. That just was publicized the last bit ago. Of course, there was a lot of Vietnam stuff that went on then that wasn't People's Park was that. Was it then or 70? I'm not quite clear on that. But anyway, there was a boatload of things that happened in 1969. But the one that we're most excited about is our opening and the fact that we get to celebrate the 40th anniversary of it.
And what was Union Square? Put us in Union Square at that point.
Union Street. It was kind of a more residential neighborhood. Mm-hmm. It was some commercial had already begun, and it was a mix. But it was definitely more residential than it is today. Today, there's barely any residential in that particular seven-block stretch that you think of. There were laundromats, hardware stores, little corner groceries, in addition to a few restaurants and a few antique shops and a few other things. There were a few little clothing stores, but nothing like today. We've seen it change over time. It really kicked into high gear shortly after we opened, and it's gotten better and better as the years have gone by. But it's very much different today than it was in 1969.
Yeah. Was it just What was it that took you to that location? Did you just find a building you liked, or did you know something was going to happen in that area?
How about right place, right time? Okay. Good luck is what it was, really. Mm-hmm. I like to tell this story. I was in the advertising business for a year in San Francisco, having moved here from New York, and I worked down in North Beach on 222 Columbus Avenue. And once this idea to open a restaurant started to become more of a real possibility, I'd walk around at lunchtime and look for ideas. And the place I fell in love with was a beautiful old brick building off of Jackson Square that was later became MacArthur Park. It was for lease, but it was owned by an elderly man who wasn't well, and he wouldn't lease it to anybody. He had a big for lease sign, but he wouldn't.
He just didn't approve anybody.
Right. So the real estate fellow that we had come to know said, there's something I have out on Union Street I'll show you. So we went out and took a look at it and said, okay, fine, we'll take it. And it was that simplistic. It wasn't having done any studies or demographics or this or that. We did live in the marina down on Cervantes Boulevard, so Union Street wasn't terribly far from home, what had been home for about a year. But it was a very unimpressive building that had been a contractor's office, a company called Herrera Brothers Construction, which is still in business today. And this nondescript little office was on the ground floor, and the family that owned the building lived upstairs in kind of an old Victorian little rooms. And they wanted to lease it and move on. And so we got very, very lucky, but it was never had any idea how good a location it really was. But it was a bullseye.
Yeah. Now, you sent out an invitation. You sent out something remarkable when it opened. You brought it in a frame here. And let's describe it. And I want you to read the invitation.
It's a line drawing, and I feel terrible that I cannot remember the name of the artist who actually created the drawing, but it was conceived by a wonderful man named Larry Green, who did all our graphics, created our logo, and helped me with all the imagery before we opened. And this was the artist idea of what the bar was going to look like. And it's pretty close. It's definitely more rustic than the photograph would be. And we created this as an opening announcement that we were opening. We didn't send it very far and wide. We only sent it to friends and family or, a couple hundred people, because opening the restaurant as sort of untested rookies, as my first wife Catherine and I were, we had never been in the business before and had precious little experience, believe me. We knew we had to feel our way into the business, and we didn't want too many people to come at one time. Mm-hmm. So we opened rather quietly and just did this announcement, because you had to have something to announce that you're open.
Sure.
So this is what was created, and we put a little message on the bottom, and which sort of was our way of inviting the world in. And then we later, come Christmas that year, the same artist did an overlay and put wreaths over in front of the mirrors and a Christmas tree in the front, which is the way we actually decorate the restaurant. And we just put a Merry Christmas message and Happy Holidays at the bottom. So this poster is a cherished piece of memorabilia.
It's wonderful. Is it close enough for you to read that part there?
Without clinking on the microphone. So underneath the line drawing of the bar and the tables, and there's a big furry cat sitting on one of the bar stools, which is kind of fun. We've never had a cat in the place, but it fits. Anyway, it says, to relax, to eat good food and enjoy a drink, to meet people you haven't seen since last night, or maybe haven't seen before at all, or just to sit and watch the world go by. Perry's, 1944 Union Street, San Francisco, open daily for lunch, dinner until midnight, and brunch on weekends, drinking until 2. So it was kind of short and to the point, but it was the message we wanted to convey.
Yeah, and it's a good message. It's a really good message. So did the world come?
They later came. They trickled in at first, and it was perfect. People had watched it being built and saw the construction fence, and we had a logo on the fence, so they knew it was going to be a restaurant. We just quietly opened the doors one day, and people came in and like, oh, wow, this is nice, and it kind of grew and grew and grew, and we're just like we wanted to do. We kind of felt our way through. Mm-hmm. And then it started to get busier and busier. And a fellow named Glenn Dornbush, who was a public relations man who you possibly knew way back then, kept asking me, can I tell the media about this? Can I tell him? I said, no, not yet. So finally I told him he could, and he started to bring everybody. He brought in Herb Cain. He brought in Jim Dunbar. He brought in Don Sherwood, the old legend on KSFO.
Sure.
I mean, it was remarkable. But one of the most important people he brought in was a lovely woman named Blake Green, who worked for the Chronicle. And she decided to do a two-page story, feature story on the restaurant, which ran in October of 1969. And the day that that paper was published, life was never the same again. Everybody came, everybody who had never been there yet, and that was many, all came at once, and they stayed and stayed, and they're still there, I'm happy to say. But it just literally blew the doors off, and it was we were so overwhelmed.
Yeah, so that was just 3 months,
yeah.
your fourth
and,
month.
And frankly, we weren't ready for that. Uh-huh. We made our share of mistakes, but we survived those mm-hmm. mistakes. And we learned, I've often said it's like having a tiger by the tail. Because there were so many people and we wanted to be sure everyone was well taken care of. And we got to that point, but it was a little crazy for a while.
How did you develop the initial menu and what was that menu like?
Well, the menu was very limited. It was only about 9 entrees and mm-hmm. probably 3 or 4 or 5 appetizers and a few salads. And it was food that we wanted people to enjoy. The background here is having grown up and lived outside, grew up outside New York City and then lived in New York after college and going to some of the East Side pubs in New York was where, frankly, a lot of the ideas for how we wanted to mm-hmm. represent this restaurant came from. A little place called Martell's on the corner of 83rd and 3rd was a favorite spot. P.J. Clark's, surely, mm-hmm. most everybody's heard of. That still goes strong today on the corner of 55th and 3rd. And the hallmark of these places was to serve very simple, straightforward American food, a really good hamburger, a good steak, good salads, and on weekend brunch, a good Eggs Benedict. So those are things that we knew we wanted to do and really wasn't being done in San Francisco in this particular style. Mm-hmm. So it was we had those items I mentioned. We had a London broil. We had shepherd's pie. I mean, a real
yes,
old-fashioned thing.
Shepherd's pie. I love it.
A wonderful French onion soup, which was actually an adaptation of a Julia Child, her mastering the art of French cooking.
I've had your onion soup on many occasions.
And I'm happy to say it's the same today as when you would have last had it or when it was 40 years ago. And that recipe is so tried and true. So it was just the things that we thought that we liked that we thought surely other people would like. And you just had to have a big, juicy hamburger. That was really, very important. And wonderful Eggs Benedict on the weekend. And that's sort of how we came up with it. Mm-hmm. Again, no scientific studies here.
Yeah.
What is the public eating today? Uh-uh.
No, just what you wanted to do.
From the heart. It was all from the heart and gut feel.
That's probably why it works so well.
Well, I think hopefully so.
And you opened initially, is it a full liquor license?
Yes.
Yeah,
we had a full liquor license. I went to bartending school. I wasn't going to be a full-time bartender, but I figured I better know how to do it, and I hadn't done it before. So I went to this silly bartending school down in the Mission District. It was actually a great experience, uh-huh. and I learned to do a few things. And sure enough, I found myself behind the bar once we'd opened, and I was glad that I knew as much as I had learned at that school. But I wasn't good enough to be one of my own bartenders.
No,
we were very lucky.
Kitchen now and then.
We were very lucky to meet and be able to hire some wonderful people, the most notable of whom is Michael McCourt. Michael mm-hmm. was our opening bartender, one of the main bartender, and then and some other wonderful guys, and it really set the tone for the personality of the place. And mm-hmm. Michael, God love him, is going strong to this day. Not he doesn't work for us anymore, but he's, I think, at a ripe young age of 72, still holding forth. He's just had the sadness of losing his brother Frank, which I'm sure you read about.
Oh.
And Frank is
yes, that's right. Yes,
Frank McCourt. I was fortunate enough to meet when he uh-huh. came out to see Michael. Just a wonderful man himself.
Angela's Ashes.
And he was out here in the mid '80s with the other McCourt brother. Well, one of the other McCourt brothers, Malky, doing a 2-man show called A Couple of Blackguards, a little stand up show they did. And I mean, the talent in that family is just remarkable. Yeah. Anyway, Michael had a lot to do with making the bar at Perry's in those early years a real bar.
You're listening to Mouthful on KRCP. Mouth taters, yeah!
Hey!
It's Mouthful. It's Michelle Anna Jordan. It's KRCB. My guest this evening, Perry Butler of the famous Perry's on Union Street in San Francisco, coming up on a 40th anniversary. Be a big celebration. Four-day celebration? Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, four-day celebration.
Yes, 4 days.
Maybe we should talk about that next and then go back into history. There's so many people I want to ask you about. But.
And we're actually going to sneak a fifth evening in on the before the 4 days officially begin, and we've invited everyone who's ever worked for us to come back for,
oh, how fun.
For cocktails and dinner and kind of a do you remember when session. It'll be very fun, and I think we'll probably have about 50 of our former employees, the furthest of whom is coming from Scotland, one from Boston, one from Michigan, and all over. I mean, I'm very touched that they're making this effort to come. Anyway, so we do that on Wednesday night. And then starting Thursday, Friday, and Saturday, the celebration in the restaurant is highlighted by, we, of course, decorate with balloons and streamers and all the fun-feeling things that those represent. But we our main thing is celebrity bartenders.
You've got quite a list here.
Yeah, a lot of good friends, personally good friends, and people who have been Perry's people over the years are the people that we invite. And they come in the evening and spend about a half an hour each behind the bar. We keep our own bartenders back there to do the heavy work, but the celebrities get back there, can pour a few beers, talk to people, and just have fun.
So and right here, top of the list, Willie Brown?
Willie Brown. Willie's done it before. He's a veteran. I see Willie on a regular basis still. Mm-hmm. His office is right next to our new restaurant, Perry's on the Embarcadero, which we opened back in the fall down near the waterfront. And Willie's right next door, so I get to see him. He was the first one I tapped for this, and he was very happy to do it. He first did it at the 20th anniversary with Herb Cain, Dwight Clark, and Huey Lewis. The four of them were back there at one time. We've never had a lineup like that before.
That's quite a lineup.
And Willie said, let's see if we can get the same group. Obviously, we don't get to get Herb. He'll be watching from high on high, but Dwight's coming. Huey's going to try and come. He hasn't committed yet. Carmen Policy, who's a very close friend and, of course, used to run the 49ers and now officially a vintner. Ted Robinson, who's the 49ers announcer, and this year is going to start doing their play-by-play and known to everybody for his work in baseball and, of course, on the international tennis broadcast, Wimbledon, and all those sorts of things. Bruce Jenkins, the best sports writer around for my money. Barry Tompkins, a very close personal friend, has been a sportscaster forever. Hank Greenwell, who used to be the Giants play-by-play guy. Tom Vakar, been a longtime Perry's customer, who's a KTVU reporter. Pat Gallagher, who worked for the Giants for 33 years and just retired. They're running their marketing. Andy Dolich, the chief operating officer of the 49ers. Steve Bono, former 49er quarterback. Jed York, president and co-owner of the 49ers, Joe Starkey, Cal play-by-play guy and former 49er announcer, and Rod Brooks, who's a KNBR anchor in the afternoon.
So you really got the sports world of San Francisco
well
represented.
Yeah, well, they're the
bar.
People. They're the ones that people want to see, and they're obviously it's a big part of my life as well. So that's the. Somebody I would love to have, but getting a hold of her and figuring that she's even available is probably tricky, but one of my favorite appearances in the past was Dianne Feinstein. And that's before she was a senator.
That would be fun seeing her behind the
bar. And chairman of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee and a few other little duties that she has on her plate. But they actually are going to be on recess. At the 11th hour, I haven't given up. I have Hadley Roth, who was her, he was her administrative main guy when she was mayor. He's a good friend and still comes into Perry's regularly, and I'm going to see if I can get Hadley to put the arm on her. But she had a wonderful time when she did it before. So anyway, it's mostly sports people, but we could put Diane in there and get a little heavily political.
Sure. Yeah, I think that'd be fun. What kind of specials, food, and why? I mean, you know, consumption-wise.
Yeah, we do for the whole month of August, which, of course, we're now in. We are doing one of our favorite promotions that we have during normally. We let our entire wine list go for half price on Monday nights. During the anniversary, it's that way all day, every day, the entire month of August. And it doesn't matter whether it's a $100 bottle or a $40 bottle, you get it for half price. And it's a very, very popular special. We have a wonderful New York steak we serve, and we're going to serve it for $19.69 with a decimal point in the middle there to honor the year in which we opened. And that's a heck of a bargain because it should cost a lot more than that. When we first opened, we had two beers on draft for the first 20 or so years. One was Michelob, One was Anchor Steam. We've continued to have Anchor Steam over the years, but we're bringing Michelob back and letting that go for $2 a pint for the entire month. And then finally, our world-famous hamburger is going to be half price on one night of the week only, Tuesdays. Mm-hmm. That starts during the anniversary, but we'll probably continue that because in these times people are looking for things like that. So those are things. Those are just fun little promotional things to our way of saying thank you to everybody for their wonderful patronage over the years.
How's parking these days?
You know, it's not. It's never been easy, but it's it's no worse than you remember. You can do it. Where there's a will, there's a way.
Yeah.
It's a lot better there than it is in certain places like North Beach, which where it's totally impossible. But it can be challenging. But there's a garage right next door to us, and there's one down the next block. And but determined people, like all other members of my family, when they come to meet me, they find a place on the street.
I find parking places all the time. I have no problem parking. Knock on wood. But you know.
Yeah. No. So it's you can get there.
Yeah. Actually, I shouldn't say I never have a problem parking. A hard time getting into, God, what's the name of the restaurant? I'm not going to think of it right now. It's the Spanish restaurant. It was the first really popular Spanish restaurant up near Hyde.
Oh.
I know you know
the little tapas place.
Yes.
I'm drawing the same blank.
It's the only place that's foiled.
Zarzuela.
It foiled me. I drove around for so long, and we finally had the restaurant closed when we were trying to find a parking place.
Well, that
it's
upper,
my only parking failure.
That you're now that's up on the Russian Hill part of Union Street, and that's tough for sure.
Yeah, that's the hardest. But yeah, down where you are, I do okay. So the menu now has a lot more than 9 entrees. You've got a lot more things, and the food world has shifted so dramatically since you opened. What sort of changes has, I mean, on one hand, if you had gone into Perry's in 1969 and walked in today, you don't feel like you're walking into another place.
No.
But how have you moved with sort of the evolution of food?
Well, the menu was not only limited in its size, but it was pretty much meat and potatoes. And then the first major change we made, I think, was to infuse more seafood and fish into the menu. That would have that happened in the early or the mid 70s or so, and then as people became more vegetarianly oriented, that's not even a right word, but you know what I mean, we put more entree salads on, and we just put a little more variety in some pastas and things. So it's definitely not just meat and potatoes. We do have plenty of that for those who want it, but we've just let it kind of evolve and grow over the years without making radical changes. Tried to be subtle about it and infuse things that made sense. And we've taken, there were certain things would go out of style. We've taken them off. The shepherd's pie is no longer on, and that's not because it just went away. I can't even tell you when. It was somewhere back in the 70s. But so we've just sort of tried to sort of subtly keep pace with the times and to always avoid trying to be all things to all people, because that
never works
for anybody. Yeah. But so we stayed, the whole idea of Perry's in the beginning was to have, you know, really wonderful, straightforward, honest American food that would never go out of style. And I'm happy to say that it hasn't. It's just, no matter what you're in the mood for, there's something on that menu that'll hit you right.
What's the most popular? I mean, is brunch popular?
Brunch is really popular. Brunch has really grown in popularity over the years, to the point now it's absolutely our busiest 2 meal periods of the week are Saturday. Because we do it Saturday, too. A lot of people just do Sunday. We've always done both days, and they are the busiest 2 sessions of the week, invariably. And it's a very nice, vibrant, high-energy crowd. And we, in addition to the good food at brunch, there are a quantity of Bloody Marys.
You make a really good Bloody Mary at Perry's, that's for sure.
Well, we've always been very proud of that. It's a really just a good, straightforward Bloody Mary. And there's a little secret to it, which I'll tell you and whoever is listening, that you have to use really high-quality tomato juice. We buy a product called Sacramento tomato juice, which is as good as you can get, and it's thick. So when you put it on ice cubes and there's vodka in there, it's inevitably watered down to a degree, but it's still very thick because it's so good to begin with. And that helps the drink be as good as it is.
Absolutely.
And we don't put celery sticks, and we don't put all that other silly stuff in. It's just really clean.
No strips of bacon. I saw that recently.
No. Well, people can make bloody. There's a certain place you go, you can find a Bloody Mary bar where you can put about 8 million different things in it, and that's fine if that's what somebody wants. But ours is pretty straightforward.
Mm-hmm. Have you seen alcohol taste change over the decades?
Oh, sure. When we first opened, it was a lot of vodka, scotch, and a lot of hard liquor was predominantly what people drank. Wine by the glass in 1969 was a pretty new thing, and we sold some of it, and now then more and more and more, and now it's insane amount of we sell. So beer and wine really roared to the front, maybe 15 years ago, I think, and we've seen hard liquor sales fall back down a little bit, although people still do drink it, and probably the most popular hard liquor drink these days is martinis.
Yeah,
people love their straight up martinis,
and
or the martini-related things like Cosmos or whatever. Beer and wine are much, much served in much greater quantities than they were when we first opened. But it's balanced out.
Okay, let's take a little musical break and come back and talk about some more details of history. So, well, we're listening to that music, Dwight Yoakam it was. We're talking about some of the bartenders. Scott Beatty, who has been a guest here on Mouthful, he's been on, I think, a couple of times, wrote the wonderful Artisan Cocktail book. He's currently waiting tables at Scopa. So he bartended, or he waited tables.
Yeah, he was a waiter for us back in the mid-90s, early to mid-90s, and delightful guy.
Yeah, absolutely.
Had no idea when he left that he was going to become such a star. And, and then I opened the Chronicle one day several years ago, and there's that huge story about him and his mixology expertise that he developed at Cyrus. I was very happy for him. And we expect that hopefully he'll come back for this alumni thing. He and I have yet to connect, but I'm hoping. Scott, if you're out there, come
Scott,
on the 19th.
He should go. He'll have a blast. So one person I've been wondering about is Richard Brautigan. Customer?
Wow. Oh, yeah. Richard was a very good customer back in those days. Most unusual individual.
Now, his daughter, Ianthe Brautigan, who lives in Santa Rosa, co-hosted Mouthful with me for a year or two.
I was very fond of him. He was a most unusual guy, just certifiably brilliant and certifiably different all at the same time.
Yeah.
And very introspective, but he had a very wry and dry sense of humor. But he was a wonderful guy, and I know Richard passed away many years ago. But my favorite story was, probably a lot of people wondered this. I guess he was most well known for writing Trout Fishing in America. And I don't know if anybody's aware, but the way that book ends is with the word mayonnaise.
Yes, mayonnaise.
Well, I asked him, I said, Richard, why did you do that? He said, I just always wanted to end something I wrote with the word mayonnaise. So I just did it. I thought, perfect. What more reason do you have to have? But, I mean, you're writing a book about trout fishing in America, and the last word is mayonnaise.
So, I loved that.
He was a wonderful man, and part of that colorful era of San Francisco that is a little different today, and maybe I hate to say it, but maybe just a little less colorful, because there are people like him and a few others. Don Carpenter used to come in all the time, and Don became a very good writer in his own right. He and Brautigan were friends.
Don Carpenter, absolutely.
And I want to say Evan's last name, and I can't. Very good writer, too. Anyway, there was a whole bunch of them, and we were fortunate enough to count them as friends.
I know that in Brautigan's papers over at, I believe it's UC Berkeley, I think his papers are there, and there's just like everything, a file for everything, and there's at least one cocktail napkin that has its own file. And I just wonder, do you have cocktail napkin stories? Did these people come in and write some of their, it's like, oh, I have a great title, and write it down, that sort of thing?
I really don't have too many. I there were an awful lot of our cocktail napkins have been used for purposes other than cocktail napkins. But I always used to describe our napkins as international memo paper, because people would write this and write this and stuff it in their pocket.
Sure.
This fellow Glenn Dornbush I mentioned before, who was, became a very good friend over the years, he used to write cartoons and mm-hmm. draw people on cart. And I have a stack of them about that thick. But I'd love to have a Richard Brautigan cocktail napkin, but I don't.
Yeah.
I hope maybe one's in his library.
Maybe there's one over there. What about Herb Cain? Did he spend a lot of time there?
Herb Cain spent a fair amount of time in. Herb, as you know, his life was dedicated to the search for the perfect hamburger. And when we first opened, he thought we were coming awfully close. And that was high praise coming from him. He would come in for lunch now and again. He'd come in late at night on his way home and stop for a drink. Mm-hmm. I was really honored to meet him and to get to know him. And he was a remarkable guy, just a remarkable guy.
I actually got to meet him a couple of times. I have a great picture of the two of us together. And I think he mentioned me in his column once.
Well, that was always an honor.
Yeah.
That was an
total
honor.
Total thrill.
When he came to like and respect Perry's, Michelle, mm-hmm. and he started to mention us in his column, he did it mm-hmm. a lot for those first 10, 15, 20 years. We used to have been in there a couple hundred times, and it never failed to, make me feel really good. There were some pretty silly items in there. There were some funny ones. There were some sad ones. But just to be in his column was definitely a badge of honor.
Yeah.
And one day, I was really lucky. He came and had lunch with Glenn Dornbush and Don Sherwood, and I was invited to sit and join them. And I thought, Sherwood was a legend, mm-hmm. of course. And that, I thought, well, I'm sitting at a table with Herb Cain and Don Sherwood at the ripe young age of 27, I was 26 when we opened. And it was, I sort of had to pinch myself.
Yeah, good reason. The period that I think is not, I don't know if dearest to my heart is the right way to put it, but a period in San Francisco that I just loved. You had to get up and read Herb Cain. You also had to read Tales of the City when it was serialized in the Chronicle. And there was great music. KSAN, the radio station, was still going for, I think, some of that. And then KSAN died, but KSFX was around for a while. That was just a really wonderful time. And you were in Tales of the City. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah. Armistead Maupin decided that one of the main characters should be Brian, who was a very heterosexual waiter at Perry's, and he liked to write about his work there, his conquest there, mm-hmm. and all that. I met Armistead just, once or fleetingly. Don't really know him, but he obviously was a customer and an observer, a great observer of the scene, and decided that was a good place to place. Perry's was an appropriate spot for his main character, or mm-hmm. one of his main characters. Mm-hmm. And, it was pretty neat. And I think it was that whole, it became a book, it became a movie, mm-hmm. but when it was serialized in the Chronicle was when it was the most fun.
That was when, that you just had to wait to get the paper.
I have a quick little sidebar on that. When they made the movie, this was probably 10, 12 years ago.
I think even longer.
They called me, some L.A. person, mm-hmm. we had to sign a release to have Perry's be part of the movie. And they said, well, we don't need to do any location filming. We're going to film it down here. We're going to create a Perry's scene down here. I said, okay, fine. But if you're going to do it, you have to do two things. You have to have our tablecloths, and you have to put breadsticks on the table. And the guy said, no problem. Next thing I know, the movie comes out, and I watched it with great eagerness, and they didn't either. They just right. It was a generic restaurant, and they just called it Perry's.
They
I
always
thought,
tell you
slime
that
balls. That's just cheating.
Yeah, they always not, tell it, you that they're going to.
It's not on Armistead. It's on the people who did the
sure,
movie. But
absolutely,
that bothered me.
Sure,
anyway,
absolutely.
But we were very proud to be part of that mm-hmm. that book and that time.
Yeah, it was great. There have been a lot of really difficult times in San Francisco since you opened as well. And one of the things, anytime there's a neighborhood bar or neighborhood restaurant, when big, overwhelming things happen, I think people like to go and gather and sort of go through the shell shock or whatever it is. you know, with the people that they see at happier times. Has Perry sort of served as that sort of place?
You know, it definitely has. And I must say, you know, you always hate to have some upsetting or negative thing happen to cause that need or desire to get together. But I've always been very heartwarmed and proud of the fact that people wanted to come together at Perry's and commiserate or talk, whatever. I think the first time I saw that happen was the horrible day when George Moscone and Harvey Milk
were
killed.
Yes, that was one of the ones I was thinking about.
That was definitely, it happened then. It happened in the 89 earthquake.
Yes, that was going to be my next question.
I was out at Candlestick.
Oh, were you
about
really?
To get in an elevator. Thank God I didn't. That got stuck for half an hour. That wouldn't have been good for me. But the restaurant was, everybody came that night. We lost power and couldn't do much, but people came.
Came anyway.
And then the most remarkable time of all was on the day of 9/11. We were very, very busy. At that time, we had a restaurant down in the Financial District on Sutter Street, which is, we've since moved to the Embarcadero, but the place was just packed to the gills. Union Street was packed to the gills. Everybody wanted to be together. They wanted to watch television and get a greater understanding of what was happening, but it's nice that people feel like, you know, we're that kind of place.
Mm-hmm.
That's sort of we're their other living room, or their other den, or their other dining room, or their other whatever
exactly.
It is. And that's,
it's where you go to feel good and feel camaraderie.
I think that's high praise, and I've always been very complimented by that.
So you had been open about a year, I guess, a little over a year. The Zodiac killings were still going on.
Oh, God.
Was that something that sort of spilled into Perry's?
Well, people talked about it a lot.
Yeah.
And it was creepy because, I mean, I lived just, you know, lived down the marina, and these things were happening right around us.
Yeah.
And isn't it interesting, there's just been a flurry of recent news a few weeks ago about somebody claiming...
Oh, the woman down in Southern California.
Yeah. But anyway, no, that was weird. And it was kind of scary, but people would talk about it, and it was kind of like, you talked about it, but sort of in hushed tones because they didn't want to get too afraid.
Mm-hmm.
You still had to live your life. You still had to walk the streets, but
sure.
You hope like hell that guy didn't come along.
Yeah.
But that was in that period.
Yeah. Odd time back then. You are listening to Mouthful. My guest, Perry Butler of Perry's, coming up on a 40th anniversary. We'll be right back.
I said, W-A-L-J really tastes good to me.
It's Mouthful. It is KRCB. Thanks for tuning in. Thanks for sticking with us. You know, sometimes those CD players have a mind of their own. That was just a little nipple of Aldila, I think, Lawrence. Thank you for that. Whet my appetite. And looking at the menu, my appetite is definitely being piqued by this. We're going to come back to the present now. Talk about Perry's today and talk some more about what's going to be going on. But let's just romp through the menu a little bit. Tomato bisque.
Sinfully good. You can stand a spoon up in it.
One of those nice...
And that's high on the list of comfort food delights.
Yeah, good tomato bisque. That's a thing of joy. Yeah. That's the most popular dish over at Bistro Gentil.
Oh, really?
In Yountville. And it comes with a huge crust of puff pastry. Even in the middle of summer, it can be 100 degrees over in Yountville, and people come in wanting the tomato bisque.
Oh, that's great. That's great.
Tell me about your chili.
Chili is wonderful. It's one that that's been on the menu since the get-go, since the very beginning. I know the recipe has changed a little bit over time. Mm-hmm. Our kitchen is largely populated by some wonderful Hispanic men who love to say, "Well, can I try this? Can I try that?" But it's got a good level of temperature to it, spicy wise. But there's times when if it makes my eyes water, I ask them to tone it down. I'm a little wimpy compared to some people when it comes to how much spice I like in my food. But I figure I like to think that if it can pass my test, it's okay. But it's very good and very popular. We serve lots of it.
What's the meat in it?
It's ground beef.
Ground beef, okay. Let's see. Okay, we've already talked about the French onion soup. The Paris hamburger, what makes the... And I'm not quite as passionate as Herb Kane. I would never make that claim. But the search for a really, really good hamburger is important. And up here in Sonoma County, we had two legendary burger places. We had Rocco's, which was a converted gas station in the town of Freestone. And it had the best burger in one of those best burgers in the world. Rocco's is gone now. And then there was a place in Grayton. I don't know if you know Grayton today, but it's sort of very gentrified and very nice restaurants. But there used to be a place called Skip's. And you were kind of scared to go into Grayton because there were shootings and there were stabbings. And it was a rough place. But when you got a real craving, this was just before Rocco's opened, if you got a real craving for a great burger, you had to go to Skip's. And I had an unforgettable one there. Both of those places are gone now. And I haven't found a contender up in Sonoma County yet.
Wow. Well, that's too bad. Well, you know, first of all, a burger is a very subjective thing. People...
Absolutely.
Not the perfect burger. There would never be one perfect burger.
Right, exactly.
Your definition of one might be different than Keeley's, might be mine. From my point of view, what we've always done is bought the best quality meat we can buy. Mm-hmm. You've got to have the right ratio of fat content.
Absolutely.
There's got to be, it can't be too lean.
If it's
too lean, it's sort of like a ground steak, and it's not a burger.
It's not a burger.
And
I'm with you.
It's not going to be juicy.
I'm with you.
One important trick, which might be helpful for people to know if they don't already, we buy it in bulk. We buy it in 10-pound bags. And then when you form a patty, and ours is a full 8-ounce patty, you handle it as little as possible. You don't want to keep banging it together, because the more you handle it, it just kind of bruises the meat. So just form, and we make the patty pretty big, so it's nice and thick. So handle it as little as you can. Cook it the right temperature. And then the key thing is the bun. The ratio of, and this is one of Herb's big things, the bun was very important adjunct to the burger itself.
Absolutely.
And the bun can't be too big. It can't be too hard.
It can't be dry in the middle.
The bun needs to be a complimentary, very important complimentary accessory to the burger. And we've got a really nice soft bun that we serve these days that comes from a bakery called La Boulangère down in, they're way down in Sunnyvale. But a wonderful chef at that catering company discovered them, and we use that bun everywhere now. And it's perfect because you want to be able to push the bun down a little bit and be able to almost grip the hamburger in spite of the bun.
Absolutely.
And then condiments, again, are very personal.
That's extremely personal. Lettuce, tomato, onion.
We serve all those things on the plate, so someone can add that. Cheese or not, again, personal decisions and all that. But it's good meat, enough fat content to keep the juice level. You got to cook it right, and please don't overcook it unless you're one of those people who has to have it well done.
And those people don't get to be involved in the conversation about the best burger.
You're absolutely right. We're very much in the same way.
I think so.
I think we better come down and have a burger together and see if we can replace the ones you've lost up here in the North Bay.
Yeah, I think a trip for a burger is in my near future.
It's definitely become, over all these years, we pride ourselves on being a very good restaurant with lots of menu offerings, but it always comes back to people's love for our burger. It's still the most popular thing we sell, and it'll probably never change.
Yeah. Tell us about Perry's at the Embarcadero.
Well, this has been a very exciting new part of the Perry's world. We opened this restaurant. Again, we've been on Sutter Street. Bill Kimpton was a very close friend of mine, and Bill, who passed away in 2001, came to me back in the 90s and said, let's put a small Perry's in our hotel, the Galleria Park Hotel on Sutter. He had had a restaurant there called Bentley's, which you may recall had kind of run its course. So we opened there in 95 and had a nice little 12-year run there. It was a small place in the financial district. That was our first time of dipping our toe in that water. And then our lease was only had a couple years to go. New owner, the Kimpton Group, no longer owned the hotel. The new owners wanted to do their own thing. They said that we'd like to buy out your lease. I said, okay. And then we found what we think is a much better location down on the Embarcadero, which is actually on Stewart Street. We're part of the Hotel Griffin. stuff in a small, wonderful little boutique mm-hmm. hotel. The entrance is on Stewart, and it goes all the way through the to the Embarcadero with a beautiful view of the Bay Bridge and the water. And it's kind of a 40 years later version of Perry's on Union Street. Mm-hmm. And it's a financial district audience by day and by cocktail hour and the whole rest of the world at night and on weekends. And it's just a wonderful neighborhood. The place has a little bit of a different look and feel. The menu is essentially the same. Mm-hmm. And two of my children, Aldi and Margie Butler, are running it, which makes me extremely proud. And it's doing phenomenally well. When we opened in November, I thought, oh, my God, what a time to be opening a new business because the financial markets had collapsed. And yeah. But we'd already committed way back before we knew about these problems. Sure. And thank God we did because it's going exceedingly well and it's growing. It's flying right through the clouds, and I couldn't be happier.
Oh, well, that's great.
Yeah, it's a great story.
Uh-huh, yeah, that really is. And your kids involved. That's really cool, too.
Yeah, no, it's very cool.
What do you see in the near future? What do you see coming up?
You know, I don't know. I sort of live life one day at a time. I'm not. If you'd asked me in 1969, what do I see 10 years down the road, I wouldn't have had an answer for you, yeah. And I sure as wouldn't have had one if you'd said, what do you see 40 years down the road? But I'm very happy.
Uh-huh.
I'm really happy where we are.
Yeah, you didn't set out with a plan like I'm going to make this a San Francisco.
No, it was very much a seat of the pants mm-hmm. project, being young and idealistic and just having an idea that you really wanted mm-hmm. to do and believed in and were probably too silly to be terrified, which you mm-hmm. in this
business.
I think
that's a good thing.
Yeah, it was very good. And so, I don't know. The new restaurant is still pretty new. It's only 9 months. And this one is, we'll get through this 40th anniversary celebration. We'll all root for the economy to get better and for people to get back to somewhat of a normal life. And I don't know. I no grand plan.
Yeah. Maybe you get to go on a vacation after the big celebration.
That wouldn't be all bad. A couple of days anyway.
Yeah, a couple of days. Does Perry's have a website?
Yes, it does. www.perrys.sf, as in San Francisco, .com. No, no apostrophe.
But two S's.
Two S's. PerrysSF, as in Frank, .com.
And let's give the address again, too.
1944 Union Street. It's right in the Cow Hollow Marina District. We're between Laguna and Buchanan. Parking is available. You have to sometimes look a little bit, but a couple garages, street parking. We're open every day, starting at 9 a.m. We serve sort of a country club breakfast at 9 a.m., roll into lunch and dinner, and the bar will stay open till 1 or 2.
And the celebration is coming up on August 20th through the 23rd. But one thing you haven't talked about yet, and we've got just a couple minutes, there's a block party on the 23rd.
Block party on the 23rd. Everybody's welcome from 11 in the morning till 5 in the afternoon. We have a couple of wonderful bands, the Sun Kings, who are a Beatles cover group, and the California Honey Drops. We're going to have food, wine, beer, Bloody Mary bar out in the streets, some circus performers. Just a lot of fun, and everybody who's ever been to Perry's is invited, and even those who haven't been are invited.
That sounds like a great time. Well, Perry, thank you so much for taking time. I mean, I'm really flattered you came all the way up to Sonoma County to talk about this wonderful San Francisco institution.
Well, thank you, Michelle. It's been very much my pleasure. It's fun to be here and look out at these beautiful orchards that are sitting behind us.
And I wish you a grand celebration and a grand fifth decade.
Thank you very, very much.
And let me tell you about a couple of things coming up here on Mouthful. Next week, it will be the Gravenstein Apple. We will be talking with Stan DeVoto of DeVoto Gardens, Carol Kozlowski of Kozlowski Farms, and for the first but not last time on Mouthful, Gay LeBaron talking about the early history of the Gravenstein here in Sonoma County. And then the following week, if you watch TV at all or even listen to very much news, you've heard about a movie that is coming out, Julie and Julia. Everywhere I go, I hear about it. Well, when that book first came out, we had the author on Mouthful. So we're going to be replaying that just to give you a little more perspective should you be interested in going to see the movie. And then we're going to do something that I recorded in Hawaii back in April. I'm finally pulling it together and doing the last bit of research. We're going to have a very special show on Ava, also known as Kava Kava, the ritual and sacred drink of the Polynesian Islands. So I won't be here live, but I'll be here in spirit, and it'll be some good radio for you here on Mouthful, the Wine Country's most delicious hour on KRCB. Have a great week. Mm-hmm.
It's time for dinner now, let's go.
Mouthful is produced and hosted by Michelle Anna Jordan. Lawrence Alberti is Mouthful's engineer. For more information about Mouthful, send an email to mouthful@michelleannajordan.com. That's Michelle with one L. You can also download Mouthful's free podcast from krcb.org or from iTunes. Dinner, boy. Dinner, boy. Dinner, boy. Dinner, boy. Dinner, boy.